this week's 51%. More baby cafes are opening their doors.
Everything's set up to be a really homey, living room type of environment.
Hear from an author who guides us through muck and magic, and meet the Fire Mama. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%. We'll get to those stories, but first, Nobel Prize-winning novelist, essayist, and social critic Toni Morrison died August 5th. Her publisher says the 88-year-old died in New York City after a brief illness. And as 51%'s Ian Pickus reports, Morrison was remembered recently in Albany, New York.
She gained worldwide fame for novels like Beloved, Song of Solomon, and Sula. The first Black woman to win the Nobel Prize, Morrison's writing about America and race won her fans like Oprah Winfrey and Barack Obama. She's the subject of the recent documentary Toni Morrison, The Pieces I Am. After news of her death, many people on social media reposted her 1993 Nobel lecture.
We die. That may be the meaning of life. But we do language. That may be the measure of our lives.
Morrison went from Lorain, Ohio to Howard University. Later, she worked as an editor for many years before publishing her first novel, The Bluest Eye. Her association with the university at Albany began in the mid-80s, when she came on as professor and Schweitzer chair in the humanities.
She really did some impressive programming to get that authentic Black voice to this city and to this campus, and that was really important at the time.
Paul Grondahl is now director of the New York State Writers Institute. He interviewed Morrison for the Times Union in 1987. He says Morrison spent several days a week on campus and had a big presence, working with William Kennedy and Suzanne Lance of the Writers Institute.
There was a secretary in that office. Her name was Ronnie Saunders, and she retyped the manuscript for Beloved in the office, in the Writers Institute English Department office here on campus. And then many months later, or a year later or so, Suzanne gets a call at the office from a reporter, might have been from the New York Times, saying, could Toni Morrison comment? She just won the Pulitzer Prize for Beloved.
Grondahl recalls Morrison bringing Black arts luminaries like Spike Lee, Ruby Dee and Ossie Davis, and Ralph Ellison to campus, while also working on a new play about lynching victim Emmett Till and mentoring students.
She was really part of our, Writers Institute early history. She actually was the second guest that we had in our 36-year history at the Writers Institute. The first was Saul Bellow, which was a huge event. We followed up with Toni Morrison, who packed our campus center ballroom. Over 800 people came to hear her in 1985.
With her inventive prose style and storytelling, Morrison attained both critical and popular acclaim, plus attention from academia.
The work of Toni Morrison has done one thing, which is allowed those who were not recipients of that ugliness and violence over the centuries to understand it and see how people have maintained their humanity and their beauty and their culture and dealt with their scars throughout their time here in the U.S.
Lisa Thompson is associate professor in the African and African Diaspora Studies Department at the University of Texas, Austin. Before that, she taught at UAlbany, including a semester-long Morrison survey that she still teaches. Full disclosure, I took that course. Thompson says it was an honor to walk in Morrison's footsteps.
There is a great responsibility to take the mantle that she has, passed on, and to do, continue the amazing legacy that she has created in terms of showing the breadth and the complexity and the beauty of African-American life.
Thompson says while Morrison's death is a sad day,
it's wonderful to be able to have all this whole bookshelf of her work and to be able to share my students with her again and again and again.
For 51%, this is Ian Pickus.
And here's another story out of Albany. Baby cafes continue to open across the U.S. They provide pregnant women and breastfeeding mothers a comfortable environment in which to learn more about breastfeeding. St. Peter's Health Partners opened its newest baby cafe in Albany, and 51%'s Jesse King stopped by during World Breastfeeding Week in early August.
Here we go. 1, 2, 3.
The free drop-in center at 301 Washington Avenue is an affiliate of Baby Cafe USA and run by Albany's Baby Institute. Erin Siniscalli, Director of Community Health Programs at St. Peter's, says the cafe was established with state grants to help expecting and new mothers learn more about breastfeeding and in turn combat childhood obesity.
Babies who are breastfed when they're infants, they actually have a lower rate of obesity all the way until adulthood. And one of the theories behind that is that breastfed babies, they eat until they're full. And we don't really know how much they ate, right, because they nurse. But they learn those cues of self-feeding and that when they're hungry, they eat. When they're fall, they stop.
Lactation specialists at Albany's Baby Cafe are available Tuesdays from 10 to noon. Specialist Stephanie Avianu says a lot of the job is weighing newborns and helping young moms navigate latching, but it's also about creating a space where mothers can trade advice. Avianu says motherhood can be isolating, and while the internet can provide a sense of community, it also comes with its fair share of myths and misinformation.
You know, we just kind of joke that it's a blur of, like, boobs and wet diapers, but no, we say about 8 to 12 times a day is usually what we'd expect. So approximately every 2 hours, but not putting the baby on a schedule, watching those babies, that baby's feeding cues, you know, baby will often want to nurse multiple times in the course of an hour and then might sleep for a little bit.
Avianu says babies can continue breastfeeding up to age 2. The biggest myth? That mothers are supposed to grin and bear it.
Pain is a sign that something's wrong. So moms will come in and they'll be like, oh, sometimes it's their second baby. And with their first baby, they just say, oh, I just was in pain for 6 weeks and then it finally resolved itself, you know, and sometimes it doesn't.
While the Washington Avenue Cafe is the first in Albany County, it's part of a growing effort in the Capital Region. The CEO Community Center in Troy also hosts a baby cafe, as does the Phyllis Bort Branch Library and Literacy Center in Schenectady. Avianu says additional sites are in the works in Schenectady and Cohoes, all in an effort to increase accessibility.
We're trying to reach moms that maybe don't have the resources or don't have transportation or reliable transportation so that they can come, you know, to a site that's close to where they live. So in Troy, you know, it's right in downtown and moms can come, you know, taking the bus or even walking. And so same thing here.
All of this comes on the heels of World Breastfeeding Week, a global initiative campaigning for paid parental leave and breastfeeding-friendly workspaces. For its part, Siniscalli says St. Peter's has used grant funding to establish lactation stations at Schenectady's Proctor's Theater and Colony Center. A mother herself, Siniscalli says she wishes she had a baby cafe when breastfeeding her children.
I had a really hard time learning how to breastfeed, and I remember calling the lactation consultants in the hospital, and they said, you can take the baby and you can drive to the hospital and see me when you're available and I'm available. But to have a place that at my leisure I can come and drop in and get the support, not just from the lactation consultants, but other moms. Plus, we have places for children to play in these centers. Everything's set up to be a really homey, living room type of environment.
Baby Cafe USA was established in 2011 and has 45 drop-in centers across 14 states. The organization says it supports more than 2,000 moms a year. Reporting from Albany, I'm Jesse King.
The U.S. Coast Guard has announced it is modernizing its body composition standards for its active duty and reserve service members. The pilot program offers multiple opportunities for service members to demonstrate compliance, including a new abdominal circumference and fitness test. It also better connects medical professionals to the health assessment. Recent studies show abdominal circumference is a more accurate measurement of overall health risk than the standard taping methods. Historically, 17% of all active and reserve personnel weigh-ins require the use of body measuring or taping. The RAND Women's Retention Study and Holistic Analysis identified an existing policy that resulted in inequitable outcomes based on gender, disproportionately impacting women at a rate 3 times higher than men. Dr. Sharon Ufberg returns with her 51% segment, Force of Nature. This time, she interviews Wendy Knox, a self-proclaimed author, artist, and uplifter. Knox's mission is to uplift and inspire others to transform their muck into magic. And her book is called From Muck to Magic, An Uplifting Journey. She says it's a journey from self-doubt to self-love. Ufberg asked Knox about her story. What's the muck and what's the magic?
Well, Sharon, I'll start with the muck. In my past life, I was the only
female, senior vice president, creative director, and one of the largest advertising agencies in Los Angeles. Kind of like Don Draper in Mad Men, but without the cigarettes or the martinis. Even though I created award-winning commercials for brands like Acura and Honda, my soul longed for something more. Unexpectedly, I was forced to find it when I lost my executwoman job at 50 and found myself stuck in the muck of self-doubt, fear, and now what? Sobbing in my backyard, I asked the universe, am I too old to reinvent myself? Please give me a sign. I went for a walk in my neighborhood, and when I came home, I found hundreds of red dragonflies whirling and swirling above my garden like a dragonfly ballet. It was unbelievable. I'd never seen anything like it. And they stayed for 4 hours the first day and came back for 3 more days. Well, at that point, I did what anyone would do. I Googled dragonflies, and I learned something amazing. Dragonflies spend most of their lives crawling in the muck at the bottom of a pond. And while they're down there, they shed old versions of themselves and grow new ones over 4 years. And then one seemingly random day, the dragonfly crawls out of the pond and into the light, and her wings unfurl. It turns out they were growing the whole time she was in the muck. And she doesn't even fly until later in life. So I asked for a sign, and boy, did I get one. I realized they must be coming to me because I was a dragonfly, and I was growing my magic in the muck. But that was just the beginning. I started seeing dragonflies everywhere I went, on the freeways, on shopping boulevards. One day I was walking across a golf course on the way to lunch, and there was another swarm of red dragonflies, and I thought, okay, that's it. These dragonflies, they must know I have a background as a copywriter and a branding specialist, and I think they want me to get their story out into the world. So that's exactly what I'm doing now. I've written and painted a book, like you said, called From Muck to Magic, which really takes people through the journey of the dragonfly, through our darkness, through the blues and blahs of life, into the light of possibilities, from our muck into our magic. And it's my way of sharing the dragonfly story to help others change their story.
I really hear the passion in your voice when you start to tell us about this very metaphorical experience you had. And I'm curious why you feel so compelled to share the story through your art and your poetry with other women.
Well, first of all, it felt like a miracle, and it's not something that happens every day. It certainly hasn't happened since. I'll see a dragonfly here or there, but never, you know, a whole huge congregation of them. So I felt this happened and came to me for a reason, and the dragonfly story really helped me look at my story differently, and I want to share it with others because there's so much in our lives that we can't control, but we can control how we look at it. And this story gives us a paradigm for changing how we view our life. We can look at it as there's gifts growing in our struggles. There's magic growing in our muck, and it's such a different way to see it. It takes us from being a victim into being a victor. And I believe in my experience, I've seen that life is a continuing process from muck to magic and back again. It turned out that losing my job at 50 was not the worst thing that ever happened to me. Almost losing my only child to addiction was. And as I found myself stuck in the muck of the deepest kind of fear and grief and angst, there was some more magic that emerged. There was the magic of hope and encouragement in thinking about the dragonfly. Like the dragonfly crawls through the muck, I allowed myself to be in those dark feelings, not to fight them, but to surrender. And in that surrendering, many, many gifts were born. Among them was this book. I found, I was sitting one day at my computer and the words to a poem just came to me. It started, "Have you ever been stuck, so stuck in the muck with the yuck and the guck that you thought, what the muck?" And it goes from there, taking us through the feelings that come to us and the sadness and the grief that we all go through as humans. And through the poem is sort of this journey, this recipe for self-love and taking care of ourselves. So as women, I feel like we take care of everybody, and it's hard to take care of ourselves. And this book I'm offering to the women of the world is sort of a soothing balm for the soul, whether you're having a bad day or a dark night of the soul, whether you're going through a change, a transition, a big birthday, a divorce, whatever it is, the dragonfly story helps us see our story differently. It invites us to go into the dark to find our light, through our struggles to find our gifts, and into the muck to find our magic. And I think it's so reassuring and such a healing way to look at life. And that's why I'm so compelled to share it with women, because it's helped me so much. And I want to share it with other women who I know are going through the same kinds of things that I've gone through.
So do you feel that this rising up from your own personal muck to find your own magic is a uniquely women's story?
Well, that's a really good question. When I speak to groups of people and I talk about women, there's always a couple men that go, "Well, wait a second, I relate to this story too. I relate to going through dark times to find my light and, you know, the muck of adversity and the gifts." But I do feel that women in particular have more kind of emotional muck. I feel like we've had more to overcome in our society, and now seems to be a time with Me Too, Time's Up, where women are starting to really speak up for themselves. But what I found is we need to not just stand up in the world, we need to stand up to the voices inside of our heads. So many of us have taken in these kind of diminishing critical voices, some of which, you know, we've inherited through the voices of society and the culture, or some of us from our upbringing. But those voices in our heads that tell us you're not enough, you're not this enough, or thin enough, or young enough, or you're too sensitive, or too scattered, or not strong enough, or you're too vulnerable, or the big one is you're too old. I think in my process of reinvention, which I know so many women go through at midlife, it's really challenging because that voice in our heads will tell us you're too old. Are you crazy? Why are you trying this or that? And one of the things I really love about the dragonfly story is they don't even fly until later in life. And I know for myself, I didn't get my first book published until I was 65. And I just had my first art exhibit at 65 in a gallery. And I've had to do a lot of work on that voice in my head, the voice that says, "You're not really an artist, and who do you think you are?" And I believe a lot of women have that voice in their heads. And this book, through my paintings and through the poem, it takes you through those feelings and it helps you love yourself through them. And, you know, I think this world can use a lot more love. And I think it starts with each one of us embracing and nourishing and nurturing ourselves. And that's why I think it's primarily a women's story. One of the paintings in my book is really a self-portrait of me when I was in the executive world and had a big red zipper on my mouth. And I think lots of times as women, it's hard for us to really speak up and advocate for ourselves. And I think this book gives you permission to do that in a very gentle and loving way. And I've talked to young girls who have said it gave them courage and inspiration. And I've talked to 70-year-old women who said it gave them permission to finally bring their art into the world. So I think there's a lot of healing inside of it for women of all ages and open-hearted men too.
Wendy, the book is beautiful and inspirational. The poetry is easy to take in and open up to one's own unique gifts. I'm so happy you were here with us today. Can you tell people how to find your book and how to find you?
Oh, definitely. I think the best way is to go to my website, which is wendyknox.com. But it's Wendy with an I, even though my mother named me with a Y. I changed it to an I because I wanted to be different. So it's Wendy, W-E-N-D-I, Knox, K-N-O-X.com. So wendyknox.com is where you'll find my book. And I'm also going to start making giclées of my paintings because so many people have asked for it. So all that will be on my website, along with my blog, which I think is pretty uplifting and inspiring as well.
Thanks so much for being with us today. That was Wendy Knox, and this is Sharon Ufberg on Force of Nature for 51%.
Dr. Sharon Ufberg is co-founder of the personal development wellness company Borrowed Wisdom in California. Hillary Rodham Clinton and Chelsea Clinton are teaming up for the Book of Gutsy Women, honoring everyone from scientist Marie Curie to climate activist Greta Thunberg. Simon & Schuster announced that the book will come out October 1st. It's the first time the former Secretary of State and presidential candidate has written a book with her daughter. Each has published books, including Hillary Clinton's What Happened and Chelsea Clinton's She Persisted, 13 American Women Who Changed the World. Hillary Clinton says in a statement that Gutsy Women was a continuation of conversation she has with her daughter. Chelsea Clinton added that the women in their book were defined by a fierce optimism that they could make a difference. Spits fire. She spins fire. Amy Bloss is Fire Mama. She performs and teaches a variety of fire performance arts and safety, and she's the director of the Minneapolis Fire Collective. KFAI's Dixie Trichel shares this audio portrait.
My name is Amy Bloss, and people call me Fire Mama. Fire dancer, spinner, performer, and I run the Minneapolis Fire Collective, a group that started at Burning Man in 2008. We performed around the man before they burned him for 9 years straight. And then the last 2 years of that, I transitioned into teaching classes and throwing events under the Minneapolis Fire Collective name. I think those are my favorite performances, the MFC stuff. We'd put on these huge shows. I'd just make them up and make up choreography and invent these crazy weird props. When I think of a prop, I mostly draw it on a napkin and then hand it to my welders and they make it and then we wick it and then we burn it. All right, so when you fuel a prop, you have a metal can because plastic melts if it catches fire and that's bad. Then we put our prop in the can and then we pour the fuel on it. And then we'll make sure that's covered. Put your lid on your can before you walk away. Don't light your fuel station with candles. Electric lights only. Most props are covered in Kevlar wick, and I have many sets of poi. I have something we call warrior staves, 10-foot poles with 3 feet of wick on the end, fire helmets, fire crowns, fire wings, doom props, giant props. It's like an excessive amount of fire. It started when we did a Roman theme performance, and it was about the rise and fall of Rome. And so the doom was when they grew too big and then they collapsed. And so we called all our giant props for that routine doom props. At one point, we did a fire monster named Fred, and he took 6 people to hold up. 2 held up his head, 2 with the body, and 1 for each arm, and it was this huge fire monster. That thing was awesome. Fire does make noise. You wing it around. So I teach a variety of classes. One of them is Intro to Fire, and that's teaching poi, staff, or hoop. You have to pick one, and you focus on it for 5 weeks. But it's really about the fire safety. You have to have a safety, no matter what, when you're doing fire. I make them do an oath at the end of class. It's I promise. to never do this alone, to always have a safety, to always be sober, and to always be awesome. Something super important is to use the right fuel for fire breathing. It's not the same as what you use for standard props. Make sure you use the right fuel.
My name is Francesca. I took Amy's fire spinning class. She's just been super awesome and a community builder for us here in Minneapolis. I primarily spin fire fans. I also do staff. Tonight I'm going to be Amy's safety for Amy's fire breathing. You have your spinner's life in your hands, and you got to be vigilant and sober and with it and constantly watching the performer.
I am going to take a mouthful of fuel, and I'm going to aerate it over my flame and create a big fireball.
So usually there's a roped-off area for the spinner, and the safety will be just on that line with a duvetine blanket, watching to see if anything catches on fire on their clothes, their hair, whatever it is. If it's small enough, you say, like, left leg, and then if they look, they can tap it. If it's a little bit bigger, then you run in with the duvetine and cover the flame to put it out, and crowd control to prevent people from crossing over the line of the performer area.
Fire is a rush every time. It's dangerous and bright and it's hot and it's mesmerizing. And it's like a moth to flame. Freaking you out? It's part of the rush. Fire.
That's our show for this week. Thanks to Elizabeth Hill for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1569.